session number 1321, rule 2.
Mr. Price, Reel 2. Any other incidents you remember on those operations over the Mediterranean as you operated out of Malta and the Nile Delta?
On recollection, to foster relationships with the Fleet Air Arm or with the Navy, naval personnel used to come to the aerodrome, and we would give them a flip round in a bow fighter, and in response we would certain personnel from the squadron were invited to go on a destroyer in the Med for a day or so, and this worked very well until on one occasion, and I happened to be with my crew on a destroyer. And it was evidently, I found out afterwards, it was evidently arranged that a flight of air bow fighters should attack the ship, make a mock attack on the destroyers, etc. But naturally, I think the whole purpose of it was to see how quickly the naval personnel responded to an attack. And to our dismay, a flight of three aircraft came in, and they went to action stations. The naval personnel went to action stations and shot the first aircraft straight into the drink. Unfortunately, the other two fortunately got away. But this was a sad occasion, but one of those acts of war which unfortunately occur.
You were one of the three aircraft, were you?
No, I was on the destroyer at the time, myself.
How do you think the accident happened?
Well, whether the gunners misinterpreted instructions, because naturally in the Mediterranean there were constant attacks on fleet, on the Navy, and presumably they went to action stations, but whether their instructions only to go to action stations, but not too far, were not properly met. Who knows?
Where did it occur, the incident?
In the Mediterranean.
Near Alexandria?
Yes, between Alexandria and
Port Said?
Yes, between Alexandria and Crete, I would say, yeah.
Were they distressed on board the destroyer?
Well, naturally, but unfortunately this is one of the things that happened during the war, and unfortunately at times cannot be avoided.
Were the members of the squadron bitter about it, or did they take it philosophically?
Well, no, you just had to take it that way, philosophically. Yeah, so it was one of the unfortunate incidents that occurred, and what else?
How much success against the enemy do you think you had on these operations against E-boats and the other things that you were doing on the operations from this place in
the
Delta?
Success is a peculiar word, really, but I suppose to a degree you could say it was successful, in as much as giving air cover and the enemy not interfering in any way. Apart from that, a very large majority of our work was grain strafing. From EDCU, we also gave fighter cover to small convoys going into Tobruk, which was besieged at that time. and we were fairly successful in that respect. But apart from that, Grenzstrafing was a large part of our work. We were sent after being based at EDCU to I think it was LG10, which was south of Mirza Matru. It was a landing ground in the desert, and we did a terrific amount of Grenzstrafing from there. And we were very successful in this respect in destroying aircraft in enemy aerodromes. One particular place that we had a great success was a place called Tamimi. But there were other airfields.
What do you remember about the raid on Tamimi?
Well, the fact that we raided their the aerodrome there on various occasions, and we had quite a large amount of success in destroying aircraft.
Would you get much flak coming up as you went in for the ground attacks?
Not really, because fortunately the elements of surprise was so good that we didn't have much opposition, but we attacked various other places along the coast, and then my final one, we were due to go to an airfield in Ajir Dabia, and which was some 400 miles from air base, and unfortunately we were hit by flak and were on fire, but not being high enough to bail out, had to make a belly landing. And
can you describe in detail what happened as you were shot down?
Yes. Well, the thing was that through lack of height, had to make a crash landing, as we couldn't bail out, and the port wing was on fire. And fortunately, we managed this quite successfully. But unfortunately, I couldn't open the hatch to get out through the top of the aircraft, which normally one enters through the underside belly. But had to get through the hatch. But my navigator, who on this occasion was a Sergeant Southern. A different one to my normal navigator, because on a previous visit, my normal navigator, we were flying very low, and we were hit by an anti-aircraft fire, and unfortunately he collected a bullet in his back, but fortunately survived from this, and to this day is still going strong. But Sergeant Southern, who got out of the aircraft when we crash landed, came and managed to undo the hood for me, and I got out. But in doing so, I got burnt somewhat.
Where?
This.
Your left hand.
Hands and face, yes, but this one particularly, and. From there, we were a number of Italians and Germans arrived by various means, truck, etc. But fortunately, I was carrying a revolver, which I threw back into the aircraft, and we got away. Unfortunately, it blew up. Anyway, we were taken to a field hospital. I was taken to an Italian field hospital, and he was taken by the Germans to another base. But I was given some treatment, and we were then reunited and taken by truck, which took a couple of days with a stop halfway at some jail where we were given well, no facilities for toiletry or anything like that, and I couldn't, unfortunately, manage to do much for myself through my burns, because the skin was, when we were shot down, was just hanging from my fingertips.
Didn't they give you any first aid whatsoever?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, they gave me first aid at this this field unit. And as I say, we were sent on by this truck with an army officer to Benghazi, to a hospital in Benghazi.
What had the first aid consisted of? Some ointment?
Well, yes, and covering it up, yes, yes. More than that, very little now.
Did the ointment and covering up help?
Well, it's to a degree, I suppose it did, but it was naturally a rather painful incident.
Did they seem sympathetic?
Oh, yes, yes, indeed, yes. And actually, the Italian officer, fortunately, with my pidgin schoolboy French, we managed to make some communication. And we eventually arrived at Benghazi, at the hospital, where we met other air crew that had been shot down in various places. And one incident I do remember there, that while we were there, Wellington bombers came over to bomb the place, and all the staff disappeared, and we just managed to, we just looked out and cheered our boys on. rather silly, probably, in a way. But from there onwards, we went by hospital ship to Naples, and were put in hospital at Caserta.
Were you satisfied with the way in which you had been treated?
Yes, yes, I can't say. The treatment was minimal, but they did what they could.
Did they speak to you about the course of the war?
Not really. I always remember being interviewed about this, about the aircraft, and I said it was a Blenheim, not a Beaufort, because Beauforts at this stage hadn't been in that sphere of war for all that long. And I thought, well, if it's of any help to endeavour to cover up to a degree, I'll say it's a Blenheim, and that's how it stuck.
Did they challenge that?
No. Couldn't very well, because it was blown up. Anyway, from Caserta, my hand was in a pretty poor state, and although it was bandaged, it had a lot of green goo dripping from it. And fortunately, there was an army officer of the medical corps there, and he did lift this and cut it with half a razor blade and released this stuff which prevented it from going gangrene. And I think that's what really allowed me to still have a useful hand today. I will say that things were pretty primitive in the hospital at that time, because even though I myself couldn't use my hands, I did help to hold down other personnel while this same doctor did a similar job on others in releasing gangrene in certain cases.
They had to be held down?
Yeah. Well, because of the lack of
anesthetic.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, after a period there, some 3 months, I suppose, or so, three to 5 months, we were, or quite a crowd of us were, put on board a train to northern Italy, Parma. And there we stayed at Ospedale Militare di Parma, which was... But whether it was we were in the actual hospital or not, I don't know, because we were looked after mostly by nuns for feeding arrangements. And they had their doctors, etc., but food was pretty scarce. But the one bright light in the sky there was Red Cross food parcels. It was terrific what they did.
What kind of food did the nuns provide you with?
Well, it was a tureen with a little bit of macaroni floating around, and occasionally you might get a sight of a piece of meat, which we always used to say was dipped in and pulled out quickly to give it a bit of flavour. And
tureen is a kind of pate, is it?
No, a tureen.
Turin,
yes, yeah. And this was just scooped out, and we had these bowls which we put in, to put it in, and a small portion of bread. That was mostly the food that we had. Not a lot, but enough just to suffice, and we used to supplement, as I say, when the Red Cross parcels, which was came along, which were the actual heyday of the stay as POWs. And then eventually the International Red Cross came and interviewed personnel and either recommended or otherwise people for repatriation.
What did you get in your Red Cross parcels?
Oh, a variety of food, canned food, and butter, and cigarettes. A very good cover of variety things. And but one thing I do remember there, which was rather interesting, we had tea, of course. And we used to make our own little fires out of sawdust in a can, and make a hole down the middle, and we used a tin can on top to make tea. And having used the tea, we'd dry it all, put it back, and sell it back to the Italians.
Did they complain?
Why could they? Incidentally, on arrival at Parma, another pilot of myself, Cliff Cornell, he was flying Tomahawks in the desert. We pulled up, and we decided we'd have a look round, and we found a door which led down to a cellar and whatnot. And we, having in mind that eventually, if we couldn't, that somebody might want to endeavour to depart. And we found a sort of passageway underneath in the cellar, and with keys in, which we commandeered in case it might be useful at some stage. But actually, it never came to any that anybody wanted to escape that way. But an escape was engineered from Parma. On one occasion, there was a room where the Sister of Mercy, Sorella, used to operate from, for want of an expression. And we did have access to this room, and we managed to get some files and file through the bars of this room. But eventually, unfortunately, on the evening when an escape of some of the officers who were going to attempt this escape, there must have been, we had a variety of prisoners in there of all nationalities, and we think that somebody must have passed the word on to the Italians, because on the occasion when it was decided that that they would make this endeavour to make this effort to escape, that the place was filled with Italian personnel, and they found out where we were due to do, and unfortunately some of them were sent to another camp because of this.
Would you have gone?
No, I couldn't. It was only those that were in a fit state to be able to, because these were all mostly wounded. You know, all the people here were wounded in some way or another.
How did you all get on with the nuns?
Oh, very well. One rather interesting point at Palma was the fact that those of us who were RCs in the sisters Sorella's room from which she operated, we used to have a religious service every so often, and the priest, who was a very likeable fella, used to bring us in bottles of vermouth, and having consumed them, we'd give the Sorella the empties to take back, which was rather amusing and very convenient.
Did you have any conversations with the nuns?
Yes, to a degree. We did learn pidgin Italian and whatnot, and they were very accommodating. In fact, the nuns themselves were very good.
Would they talk about the war and what their attitude was?
No, it never quite got to that with them, because they were so impartial, shall I say. And they were marvellous that they did as much as they could for us in the circumstances.
Did you have any contact at all with Italian civilians apart from the priest?
No. Not really. At one stage, there was a passageway through the window that we could. We could open, and we could walk down here, but there was a large wooden gate, but you could never really get contact with civilian personnel. Just to annoy the Italian guard at times, the windows were detachable. There were large windows, and we used to take them off the hooks and endeavour to hide them, merely to create a little bit of amusement for ourselves, I think, more than anything else, and to the annoyance of the Italian guards. But incidentally, there we used to, for entertainment, we used to, although most of us at that stage hadn't played any bridge, we used to have a bridge drive, and of course our currency was cigarettes. I think it was 2 cigarettes to enter for this, and you would get a terrific number and probably finish up with probably anything up to quite a number of 100 cigarettes, which from the point of view of bartering was quite a good thing. And I always recollect this, that seeing two really outback Australians won this competition. And I always imagined them sitting at home in an English country garden playing 2 dear old ladies at the same game, and they were really, really couple of rough diamonds, but they knew how to play bridge.
Did anybody become wealthy through?
No. And then, of course, the highlight was when the repatriation unit came, Swiss repatriation unit, arrived, and various people were put forward for interview, and some were lucky, some were not, and on this occasion, to my delight, I was passed as being one to be repatriated during the war.
Was it according to the severity of the condition?
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, more or less on whether it was decided that you would be of any further use militarily during the war or not. Anyway, the day arrived and we were transferred from Parma to Livorno, and from there by train, which took, I think, somewhere around about 5 days, being shunted backwards and forwards from Italy through France, Spain and Portugal. Where we eventually arrived at Lisbon. What amazed me was that in Lisbon the trains there were fueled by wood. And anyway, we were delighted to get to Lisbon, where the English population there provided a coach and took us around to show the sights of Lisbon, and eventually went by hospital ship back to Avonmouth. But the food they gave us, we just couldn't stomach, not being used to good food, and most of us turned green on the journey. Just couldn't, our stomachs just weren't used to having much food. Mm.
Did you have to sign something to say that you would not take further part in the war?
No, not to my knowledge, no. One interesting thing was that when I was captured, I had some piastres on me, Egyptian piastres, and I did get a receipt for them. And the guard that took us to Lisbon, the train, was supposed to recompense us for the money that had been signed for. But I still got the receipt. I never got the money back. I still got the receipt to this day for 500 piastres, I think it is. whether it would be worth anything these days, I have no idea.
Oh. What happened to you back in Britain? Did you get some more medical
treatment? Yeah, eventually we were sent to an army military hospital at... can't quite recollect the name, but near Avonmouth, where we stayed for a while, and even one-legged... we weren't supposed to move out of the hospital at all, but even the one-legged boys were able to get out and go up to the local pub one way or another. But eventually, after a few weeks, we were sent home.